Welcome to Learn, Eat, and Age Well. I'm your host, Bob Blancato, National Executive Director of the National Association of Nutrition and Aging Service Programs, or NANASP, as well as the National Coordinator of the Defeat Malnutrition Today Coalition of over 100 organizations, where our goal is to expand possibilities for serving older adults through the Older Americans Act Nutrition Program and identify innovative ways to reduce older adult malnutrition. Whether you work at a state unit on aging, an area agency on aging, or a local service provider, or you're just curious about keeping current about how the senior nutrition program can continue to modernize to meet the needs of current and future generations of seniors, I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to join us in a conversation with two 2022 ACL Innovations in Nutrition Program grantees who have created cafe, pop-up meal sites, and restaurant meal programs that reach populations with high social and economic need. Today, I'm delighted to be talking to two friends, Derek Anderson, Director of Nutrition Services at H-SPAN. H-SPAN services 28 cities and towns north of Boston, along the New Hampshire and Massachusetts border. H-SPAN's AAA area encompasses urban, suburban, and rural areas. H-SPAN's largest community of Lowell is home to the second largest population of Southeast Asians in the country, as well as a sizable population of Hispanic older adults. And their grant project has developed restaurant meal sites focused on serving those populations. And Tasha Romo, Director of Nutrition and Activities at the Humboldt Senior Resource Center, which is a nutrition provider in rural Humboldt County, which is located in Northern California. Their program provides congregate and go-to meal options through their heritage cafe locations and mobile heritage cafe programs. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the Nutrition and Aging Resource Center for supporting this podcast, and many thanks to their funder, the Administration for Community Living, or ACL. This resource was supported in part by a cooperative agreement. Grantees carrying out projects under government sponsorship are encouraged to express their views freely and conclusions. Therefore, points of view or opinions do not necessarily reflect official AOA, ACL, or DHHS policy. If you're not already familiar with the Nutrition and Aging Resource Center, its purpose is to build the capacity of senior nutrition programs funded by the Older Americans Act to provide high-quality, person-centered services and to assist ACL and stakeholders with identifying opportunities to enhance program sustainability and resiliency. The Nutrition and Aging Resource website is at acl.gov/senior-nutrition, and we'll be mentioning this website again throughout the podcast. So stay tuned to hear about how this valuable website and resource center can be a key to your senior nutrition program success. And for today, for me especially, it's excited to have this roundtable of innovators, which is really the future of our program. And so I want to welcome Derek and Tasha to this podcast. And let me begin with Tasha and say, and ask you this question: can you define for the audience what a cafe program is and how you've implemented it?
Yeah, for us, a cafe model is kind of changing that mindset around senior dining centers from kind of an institutional idea of a cafeteria style model to a welcoming, modern cafe model. And we've implemented it through a variety of ways. Ours is a replication grant. So some of our implementation came from the Encore Cafe before us. Things like a build your own salad bar and modified uniforms. So we've moved from cook shirts and aprons to t-shirts and ball caps, just to kind of make it more of a cafe style environment. We also do table service as opposed to people coming to a window, choice entrees, and meal and menu variety. So we have three meal options each day, as well as a variety of drinks for people to choose from. And the build your own salad bar has really been the biggest success of our cafe model.
And you also have pop-up sites. So what's a pop-up site and how has your project developed them?
So our pop-up sites are often called our mobile program, and they're delivered through partnerships with community organizations in our most rural communities. While all of Humboldt is rural, we have communities that don't have senior centers, nutrition dining sites, or even really grocery stores. So we go out to these communities through partnerships with either like a tribal community or a volunteer fire district and pop up once a week at their location and provide meals, socialization opportunities, and access to a nutrition social worker to people living in those communities who would maybe be driving 35 plus miles in each direction to access one of our dining sites.
Very good information. And Derek, for you, my friend, what is a restaurant meal site? How has your organization implemented it?
Well, thanks, Bob. Our restaurant meals site program is where our senior nutrition program partners with local restaurants to provide meals to eligible older adults in some of our communities. So we had our pilot, which is named Reunir, which is translates to gather in Spanish. And our goal was to improve access to culturally appropriate healthy meals and to increase social engagement for older adults from immigrant communities. The first of which, as you mentioned, Lowell, having such a large population of Southeast Asian older adults, and our second location in Lawrence, where our headquarters are for AgeSpan, where 70% of our population is of Hispanic descent. To put it together, we really put together a great internal team of specialists here at AgeSpan. We have a great project manager, dietitians, nutritionists, data quality specialist, and then we elicited a community-based partner named Cambodia Mutual Aid Association, and they assist us a lot with translation, reaching out into the community because they're embedded into the local community. And then to get it started, we really just reached out to local restaurants initially when we applied for the grant to try to gauge interest. And we were really thrilled that we found our first partner, Sizzling Kitchen. They're a local owned husband and wife team. And our dietitians worked really hand in glove with them to develop a modified menu from their existing consumer menu to provide culturally appropriate healthy meals. And then through our partnership with the Cambodia Mutual Aid Association, we reached out and tried to find older adults that were at risk for food insecurity, social isolation, as well as working with some technology partners. We found a great company called CatMat, who successfully has developed a really great program called Senior Dine, which tracks all the participation between the consumers and the restaurant, try to make everything as seamless as possible. And then we just hit the ground running, and the response to the program has just been extremely positive.
A quick follow-up to that. Were these relationships in existence during the pandemic, or did this all happen after the pandemic?
All after the pandemic, and for us, trying to make inroads into those communities, that we struggle with our regular senior nutrition programs, but it really got heightened after the pandemic, Bob.
Great. I have a question for each of you, and Tasha, I'll start with you. I'd like to hear about some of the successes, but also some of the challenges that you encountered in your program.
Thanks, Bob. I think one of the biggest successes is that our goal was to ensure that more seniors had access to nutrition services, and more seniors have had access to nutrition services. So that's kind of our big measure of success, is that the program has been very well utilized. I think we've also sort of started to work on attracting a younger senior, which is something that our program hadn't seen prior to rebranding Heritage Cafes. We also have been through 1 year of service of both the mobile program and the Heritage Cafe modifications, and we have really high satisfaction levels. We haven't seen really any turnover in participants. And we're reaching a much wider service area. Although our goal has always been to reach all of the seniors living in our community, it's just been impossible without this grant to really touch those far out communities that, you know, are small and have limited access. So I think the greatest success, though, has just been ensuring that people do have access to nutrition services that really need it.
Mm-hmm. And how about your challenges? What do you pick your one or two challenges?
Well, I think our greatest challenge is that the program is so well utilized. So in our original grant proposal, we hoped over the 3 years to offer 4 mobile locations. We currently offer 3 of those 4 mobile locations. And our original goal was to serve 100 people across the 4 locations, so averaging 25 per location. And we already serve 148 between the 3. So the expense of the program is a little bit higher than we originally expected, just because attendance is so much higher and need is greater than we could have imagined. And not so much a challenge, but a lesson learned for us was how vital the partnerships in these communities would be. Obviously, going into the project, we knew partnerships would be vital for location, but also for promotion, for sharing, you know, their participants with us, for supporting changes that we had to make throughout the program. So developing really strong partnerships has sort of been the lesson learned. Although we knew, we didn't know how vital it would be to our overall success.
Thank you for that. So Derek, same question for you, your successes and your challenges.
Sure, thank you. Our initial goal when we applied for the grant was to screen in 600 older adults over the 3-year grant period. And now, as we just completed our second year, moving into our third, you know, I'm just excited to say that we've exceeded that goal. As of today, we have 625 participants into the program. We've completed initial screenings on all of our consumers, and we continue to rescreen every 6 months, and we've seen a decrease in consumers reporting food insecurity, less food insecurity, less loneliness, which we're thrilled about. And then, you know, we continue to gather data to show our effectiveness. Our customer satisfaction is phenomenal, as the consumers can choose the best healthy option that fits their taste. We've now have five participating restaurants over our first 2 communities, and we'll be expanding into our third community, Salem, Massachusetts, in the fall. To date, we've served over 4,000 meals, but even more importantly, we've solidified the bonds between the communities that we targeted. And now these consumers, if they are in need of future services, from our agency, they know that AgeSpan is a trusted partner. We've also done some really great reframing aging training with the actual restaurant itself, the workers and the staff there, just so they can understand better understand how older adults are perceived. And lastly, we really helped local businesses to kind of get back on their feet after the effects of the pandemic to recover some of those lost sales that, you know, are so vital to keep these restaurants viable in the community.
And challenges. Tell me about any challenges that you think jump out at you.
Sure. And, you know, nothing insurmountable, but some challenges that we've had. You know, sometimes when we explain the program to some consumers, they think automatically they're enrolled in the program and they haven't completed the initial screening. So they've gone into the restaurant and tried to get a meal. So, you know, we've tried to run into a few challenges like that. You know, on the other side, we also had some consumers that have completed the entire referral and screening process, and sometimes they forget or won't go to the restaurant, especially up here in New England with some of our weather challenges. So, you know, the team that I have will really work some gentle reminders. Some of the consumers, when we screen them, you know, have identified some needs outside of nutrition. So our team will work to refer them, whether it's internally to HBAM or externally for additional services. And then probably, you know, something that we've dealt with, and it's less so now, but over the first 2 years, the high cost of foods over the past 2 years within some inflationary constraints, we really had to work closely with our restaurants to develop nutritional needs that are also cost effective for the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. You know, interesting, because I was on the challenge side, I was curious that transportation didn't come up, but I have to ask each of you, where does transportation factor in as either the success or the challenge of your program? Tasha?
So I think transportation is a huge issue for the Heritage Cafe locations, for the three in-person dining locations. And transportation is the reason we started mobile cafes. So the whole reason we applied for this grant and included that is that throughout the pandemic in Northern California, where we are, gas was $6.59 per gallon, and participants were calling us saying, I can't afford to come get meals. And so it really resonated with us that we need to meet people where they are. And so these are communities that didn't have established Meals on Wheels routes or anything really to provide services. So transportation is a big issue with cost, but also just lack of infrastructure for transportation. It continues to be an issue for dining centers. We've been lucky that we've applied for other grants outside of this to purchase bus passes or, you know, assist people with getting Dial a Ride, which is assistive transportation. So we've been lucky in that way, but it's still a huge issue in our community.
And Derek, in a place where you have both urban, suburban, and rural, tell me about your challenges with transportation.
Well, the two communities that we're focused on right now tend to be are really urban locations. So we don't have maybe some of the other struggles that Tasha has in maybe Northern California. But transportation overall can be really a big impediment to getting services to older adults that are in need. So when we looked at different partnerships and different restaurants, we really took into account where the public transportation would be able to drop them off. Is there parking? You know, how far away from other services are there? So we really try to, you know, put that as part of the mix into when we develop the right partnerships. And, you know, we had restaurants come to us and want to participate that didn't really meet those challenges. So, you know, we kind of put those onto the back burner because we understand that, you know, the high cost of transportation, gas, as Tasha mentioned as well, it continues to be high. So we want to try to ease that burden. You know, we have also some resources put aside that, you know, if a participant that is screened in is having trouble, we will be able to get them, you know, an Uber ride or other things like that. So, you know, but, you know, thankfully, knock on wood, we've been, it's been less of an issue for our program, Bob.
So I'm just curious for both of you, judging from what you're saying, am I going to guess that most of your people don't drive themselves to your programs? They have to rely on public transportation or other means?
Gotcha. I could just stay for a mix. For us, it is a mix. You know, we do have some participants that are still driving or have family members that will drive them, you know, and then a lot of them will use the public transportation just because it's a lot more cost effective.
Yeah, and I'll say for my program, it's a fair mix as well. At the mobile locations, many people drive themselves as they're normally in little small community hubs. But to our dining centers, a lot of people rely on a friend, neighbor, or the bus system to transport them to the dining center. I would say 40% about drive themselves.
You know, you guys are bringing back memory of a project that we did with NANS for a number of years ago, before the pandemic, actually. It was a project that was called the Value of Socialization in the Congregate Nutrition Program. And I remember we did a survey, but then I went out and visited and sat down with interviewed probably over 200 older adults around the country at lunch tables, right? And the only place to talk to them. And you know, as you probably remember, what I found funny was that you go to these sites and they would all sit at the same table every day. You know, it was like third grade all over again, right? And but I'd say to them, so what's the main reason that you come here? And I think about 90% of them said it was socialization. So I'm curious, do you get the sense that despite the choices of food and despite the restaurant things, how valuable is the socialization part of this project for each of your projects? Derek, I'll start with you.
Socialization is a huge part of, you know, how we're screening people in. Again, with the pandemic kind of putting people in and kind of a lot of our older adults didn't have the resources to get out or had a place to get out. The social engagement is huge. We've had some restaurants reach out to us that only have like a counter service. And we really kind of skewed away from that. We really looked to find partners that had in-person dining, even if they go and they eat by themselves. We're looking to implement, a dining program that we match up, single participants together so they can eat together, especially with some of our participants. English is not their first language, so we want them to engage. And when they do, the testimonials that we get are just phenomenal. They really enjoy the whole ambiance, the culturally appropriate food, but also just getting out of their home, just for a couple of times a month is really invaluable.
Tasha?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge part of our program, both the mobile locations and the in-person locations. One thing that we saw with our mobile locations, we initially started them with bringing one hot, ready-to-eat meal and then four frozen takeaway meals so that everyone would come together and, you know, enjoy a meal together and take four away with them. And immediately there was a lot of pushback. People were saying like, we just want to take our meals to go. And so we said, yeah, great, take them. Like, they're yours, take them where you want. But over time, people started staying longer and people started building relationships, even in this mobile program that was really intended for food access. You know, that socialization we wanted, but it wasn't, we weren't sure it was going to happen. And now people come and they stay and we have tables popped up. And even though we're now providing five takeaway meals, they're coming and having a cup of coffee and they're getting on the computer with a social worker and they're talking to each other about their grandkids. So it's really been special to see how that's become a part of the program, but also how people in both programs are saying, this is the reason I get up. This is the reason I get dressed, you know, coming here and seeing my friend, seeing my neighbor. And especially as people lose their ability to drive, that piece has been really important, is that connection that they've already made in the dining centers, that they've established these relationships, that now they depend on each other as their social support system outside of the dining centers.
Yeah, that those testimonies are wonderful, both of you, because it's, you know, this is the thing that we all have to hear, you know, because, you know, you can talk about it, but you need to hear it from people who run these kind of programs. Now, you know, it's wonderful that both of you got grants to start your program, innovation grants, and it proves the value of these grants, actually, because they open up new doors and new opportunities. But I guess the tricky question is, how do you sustain this program after these grants? Derek, I'll start with you on that one.
Well, it's Bob, it's something that we've really been working on since day one of the grant, because, again, with the 3-year grant, we didn't want it to just fall off the radar screen. You know, I can say I'm really extremely lucky and blessed to have the support of AgeSpan's board of directors, our CEO, our executive team. We've invested in new positions. We have a healthcare integration specialist, a grant specialist. So they're working behind the scenes to find funding opportunities like strategic partnerships with some of our managed care entities, sponsorships, and other grant opportunities to not only sustain our existing program, but, you know, our goal is to expand the program as much as possible. You know, Age Span is one of the largest senior nutrition programs in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. You know, last fiscal year, we served over 1 million meals. And, you know, we'd love to be able to have the restaurant pilot be a permanent part of our, you know, overall nutrition program, which includes our Meals on Wheels, our congregate dining, our grab and go, our traveling chef events that we currently offer. So, yes, sustainability is something that we talk about when we meet internally. And every chance I get, from elevator speeches to podcasts, you know, we're trying to get the word out to any entity that wants to really reach the communities that we're targeting for, that, hey, we're here and, you know, we really want to value a strategic partnership down the line, you know, going forward. So
that's great. Tasha?
So I can pretty wholeheartedly say we wouldn't have been able to start this program without the grant funding. But like Derek, from the get-go, we were so sure that we wouldn't start anything unless we can guarantee that we're going to sustain it. It's, you know, not in anyone's moral compass, I think, to be able to say, here's some access to services, I might take them away in 3 years. So yeah. We from the get-go were like, what can we put into place? So we looked right away at how we can generate revenue for our program through fee-for-services program. So we have, prior to getting this grant, we provided nutrition contracted services to a PACE program and an adult day program in our community, but we have expanded that, and now we're providing meals to not only our programs, but four additional day centers, and also another one will be opening in the fall that we'll provide food for. So we do have a little profit from that. Additionally, we redeveloped our catering program and cater everything from like county events to weddings, and all of the revenue from those programs go to support Heritage Cafe. And then we've really made it a focus for solicitation letters, and our fund development director to look for other grants that could potentially help sustain the program, or strategic partnerships that can kind of help move us through. We're really lucky that all of our locations are in-kind donated to us through other organizations, so it's really limited to the overall food costs and production costs for the meals. And all of the meals we provide are Title III Older American Act meals, so they do fit under our contract with our area agency on aging. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it's great that neither of you treated this thing like a one and done, because you were thinking about the people that who were benefiting from it and what that impact would be. And it's to your credit that you were looking around the corner from even after you got the grant, knowing you had a window of a couple of years, but you started working right away. And I think that's vital. So what advice would you give for nutrition programs who might want to replicate your particular project? Derek, I'll start with you on that one.
Well, you know, I think my best advice I could give is put together a great team. You know, I'm so proud and blessed at our entire team and all the hard work and dedication they provide each and every day. And I solicited this question to them, and I asked them, you know, what advice would you give to another program? And, you know, they said to me, you know, start slowly. You know, word can spread very fast on this. So, you know, you don't want to grow too big until you're ready to be able to handle the volume. Understand the population that you're trying to target. You know, this is crucial. You know, we have our own ideas, but, you know, we want to work with the community and find what's best for them. Take the time to set up systems to test them, to get them in place. You know, this is really vital. You know, you don't want to have everything put together and then have your systems and training processes, you know, not hit that same timeline. For us, we dine in the potential restaurant partners. We want to experience what the consumer is going to experience and encounter. And this is vital. We test the food, we try it, and we really get to know, the partners that we're working with. We set up great training tools And don't be afraid to modify that as needed, because you know what you think at the beginning might not necessarily work once you're in that implementation phase. We got creative with menu planning, and you know, so again, work you know on different ideas, and you know, try to overcome any challenges or impediments. Find partners that are aligned with your shared goals. You know, again, we talk about that in a lot of different areas, but we have to be aligned in our shared goals. And then the last advice that I would give is be open to change in any area, in any part. You know, the ACL, you know, gives us a lot of flexibility to kind of modify and change our grant. And don't be afraid to fit and change and adapt, you know, to the betterment of the entire program.
Great. Tasha?
Well, geez, Derek said everything I was going to say. So I think for us, the first really important step was finding the right resources. So that was the Nutrition and Aging Resource Center. It was our staff utilizing their strengths, understanding who brought what to the table. And then we had the great benefit of Tim Getty, who had the original Encore Cafe grant that we're replicating, be the most willing support person for us. So we really, you know, defined our resources, we defined our goals, we tried to plan ahead, see what challenges may come so we could be best prepared. Really, creation of partnership. I know Derek said we say this a lot. I say it a lot in all aspects of my work, I feel like. But this, it was vital. We would not have been successful without partnerships. And then just kind of seconding what he said about flexibility. Things change. People change. What was your goal will not be your goal at the end. I think, you know, we found out a lot, we learned a lot along the way. And I think being flexible and keeping your eyes open to the changes, and being okay with straying from the path you were originally on, are vital.
Great, great advice. And I'll do a little advocacy plug here, because that's my nature, as you guys know. I strongly suggest, in your case, Tasha, that you send a letter to the Secretary of HHS, your former California Attorney General, Secretary Becerra. Let him about your program and invite him out. Okay, since the Old Americans Act is coming up this year, the more you can explain the impact locally, the better it is. And Derek, in your case, Senator Markey is one of the key senators working on the early draft of a reauthorization of the Older Americans Act. We're talking to his staff a lot. Would you let him know? Let his office know about your program. Get him up there. Let him come see it. I think it makes a huge difference in terms of the impact. And my last question is more kind of a commercial here, because I'm hoping that there's some people who will view this podcast who might be financial supporters of yours to hear the story. Because, you know, some of our vendors and supporters listen to these podcasts. So how do you share your website, share how they would follow up with you? And then we'll have contact information too on the podcast. But anything you can give out right now, we'll take, Tasha, a website or something like that.
Yeah, so our website is humsenior.org. And I am completely okay if you reach out to me on my email, which is tromo@humsenior.org. I'm happy to answer any questions, help anyone, hopefully be the kind of mentor Tim was to me. And also there's tons of information about the original project that we're replicating and our project on the Nutrition Resource Center's website. So visit that as well. There's even a lightning talk about the program that we filmed, gosh, soon after it started, that really was like our original hope.
Well, maybe you should get in touch with the other T. Romo that we know in the world, Tony Romo. Maybe he can help you out too, right?
I hear all the time, are you related to him? But it's a great name, and no, I'm not.
Oh, well, you know. But maybe he'll hear about this. We'll see.
Yeah, Derek, I wish he was.
And Derek, how about you?
Well, you know, I'll second that. You know, the National Resource Center, you know, has a wonderful page called Looking to Innovate. They make it so easy. They have replication model toolkits and they can use as a guide. But like Tasha said, you know, when you have a good mentor or someone's been through the trenches, you know, and I'm really looking forward to being that kind of mentor that Tim was to Tasha, to any future grantees. So you can go on our website, agespan.org, or you can reach out to me directly, which is danderson at agespan.org, and I'm happy to discuss and talk, you know, about the challenges, and hopefully we can replicate this in many, many more locations around the country, because, you know, it's so vital for older adults in our communities.
Well, you know, you've actually helped us in a way that I wasn't expecting, in this sense. My colleague Laura and I were on a call just, I don't know, a couple hours ago with a certain Senate office that's very involved in the Old Americans Act. And a draft bill is floating around and they have the term innovation all over the place, right? And innovation is a really squishy term unless you can connect it to something real, okay? And both of you have done that, okay? You have both demonstrated, you know, what you can do with innovation in a practical, realistic sense. And that's a huge benefit for this podcast, to have the benefit of your, both of your experiences and your advocacy and your commitment. And so I'm going to say thank you to Tasha and to Derek for giving your time and your expertise to our podcast. And if you bear with me, I just need to read a few more things that, you know, are required in this thing. So let me also point out that the Nutrition Resource Center has a whole webpage on restaurant partnerships and even has a step-by-step restaurant toolkit to help programs create their own approach, along with sample menus, policies, and contract language. If you're looking for information on cafe models, food trucks, and pop-up programs, you can go to the Resource Center's website, Creativity and Innovation webpage, for lots of examples and templates for you to use. It's an understatement for me to say it's been a great honor talking to both of you today. And I want to keep up to date with you on your projects. And we've come to the end of today's podcast, but thanks again to our listeners for joining us. I look forward to more segments talking about older adult malnutrition, innovations, and many more topics that we hope you will find engaging and helpful in your work. Our podcasts are released every 1st and 15th of the month. So check back for the next segment of this podcast series. Keep in touch with us and keep abreast of the latest information from experts and your peers by visiting the Nutrition and Aging Resource Center at acl.gov/upper/seniors-nutrition and getting on their mailing list. You can submit feedback by pressing Contact Us. If you're from a local agency or an area agency on aging, the Resource Center now has interactive connection chats on a regular basis where you can learn from and share with peers, as well as subject matter experts. Until next time, keep learning, keep caring, and promoting healthy seniors. Check back for future Learn, Eat, and Age Well podcast as we continue to bring forward innovative and impactful service ideas and solutions you can use to keep your program vibrant and growing into the future. Thank you again, Tasha. Thank you again, Derek. And thanks, everybody, for listening.